Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Hilford, joined by Benjamin Richardson.
Hello, good morning.
And Josh Brown.
Good morning.
We are returning to video forms of podcasts just for the sake of getting a wider audience on certain topics. And pretty much the whole world's playing Final Fantasy VII at the minute anyway. And so we're just going to break down all sorts of things relating to it. Josh, I kind of want to start with you just because you've never played it before, the original. And I just want to see where you're at. I know me and Benji have both played it back when it first came out, and we have all sorts of thoughts spanning multiple decades. But JB, how you come down it so far?
Yes, well, I should clarify that I'm about 17 hours in, and I am about 12 or 11 chapters in as well, so I haven't seen it all, but I am enjoying it. I'm really loving it, actually, so far. I got to a moment yesterday during Wall Market where I just thought, this is amazing. This is incredible. This is unbelievable scenes. I can finally understand what people have loved for so long. But it is interesting playing it without any kind of real frame of reference, because not only have I not played the original, I know a lot of the story beats. I know kind of, I think, what's coming, but I'm also,
Even fans don't really understand the story. So
no, I just mean the things that they've done in
Okay. But without that sort of point of reference, though, it's been an interesting experience trying to kind of judge it on its own merits, but also kind of trying to figure out what is there because it was there in the original, if that makes sense. Like, there is a sewer level in it later on, which has kind of frustrated me. And I have to assume that was in the original, because I can't imagine in 2020
it was in it once.
That's the thing. Every time someone's complained about something in the remake, I've gone, well, that was barely in the original. That was like 3 seconds of the original, and they've made it a whole padded out section. And things like that are so endemic of, like, yeah, how much they drag it out to make an opening section of an old game fit for 30 hours of a new one. I think for the most part, it's still satisfying enough. But like, if you're noticing it too, that was one of my biggest curiosos reviewing it, was, would newcomers notice this stuff too?
Yeah, definitely.
Some of that stuff you definitely would notice anyway, because it's very blatant padding. Like, the fact that you return to the sewers for an entire, like, a second dungeon that's basically identical, save for some blockages here and then, and a retread of an old boss, it feels very obviously like it's designed to elongate the story just that little bit extra.
Because, like, Josh, what was the thing you were going to say? You were going to go into something in regards to, I think, was it the sewer level stuff?
I don't know. The point is already gone. The big question is, though, I was going to ask you guys, because when it first started, I love it now, but it took me about 6 or 7 hours to properly get it, because we talked, we were messaging about the first bombing run, Scott, because obviously I haven't played that in the original. So when that was happening in the game, I was just sort of, I was a bit overwhelmed. I was trying to get used to the systems. I was trying to get used to the characters and the setting. And I just thought it was a lot at once for a new player to kind of grasp. And it took me a lot of kind of sifting through these iconic moments and trying to get the appeal, because I think at least early on, from what it seems as like sort of an outsider, it feels as though they're kind of relying on that, you know, initial, we're back, where this is it, this is your childhood experience up-resed and looking gorgeous, rather than, you know, this is an awesome experience in its own right. Maybe I was just a bit, you know, maybe I was too fresh for it, though. That could be a problem.
I'm curious what, Benji, did you find the same thing? Because for me, I think it opens and ends incredibly strongly. And for me, it hangs in the middle, but that seems to be the opposite for Josh.
I think the opening's fine, but I think also it's a weird one, because it's trying to teach you how to do an old thing in a new way. So even for fans of the original, there is new information to take in when you're trying to enjoy the nostalgia hit. Whereas if you're in Josh's position, you're just trying to get used to the, like, get to grips with the game itself without necessarily noticing any of that stuff. But I think, yeah, the opening I thought was actually very strong. I quite enjoyed it. But then it did start to drop off for me.
Because they do, like, they obviously bombard you. I mean, the thing is, like, it's not that different to the original one in terms of the pacing and just being dropped into it, and you're Cloud and you're this returning mercenary and you've been hired by Avalanche, this, you know, eco-terrorist group, and we're blowing up the reactor and just get used to it. So I love that they just hit the ground running. I mean, it was as overwhelming or intense in the original one, I would say, and I still think that that stuff pretty much lands. But I think it's maybe supposed to be quite...
I'd probably say the original doesn't throw as many new gameplay ideas at you all at once. Battles don't change from the first one until the boss. You don't sort of get new characters to control and new things to consider. It doesn't tell you anything, to be perfectly honest. There's no tutorial.
Yeah, I guess it depends, like, what the specific thing was that was, like, throwing you off. Maybe the gameplay was, like, pretty frenetic and stuff. We should talk about the Scorpion boss as well, because I think both of you guys found him to be a bit of a slog.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Sorry, Benji. I interrupted you there.
No, that's okay. I mean, my expectations of the Scorpion boss were... It's an introductory boss. There's very little tactic involved. It used to be quite a quick boss. I wasn't expecting it to be this multi-part epic where I'd be fighting for my life and using lots of potions and Phoenix Downs, because I was still coming to grips with the battle system as well, which is obviously totally overhauled. So yeah, it did catch me by surprise, and I came away from it thinking I didn't really enjoy it. It felt like it was too much effort for this point in the game.
Mm-hmm. It goes on for ages as well. It's like a 4-stage thing. And I think that's kind of endemic for me of, like, how much they reapproach it as this. For me, the remake is so much a celebration of the original. And I think that's one of the first times that you see them. It's almost as if they're sitting in a designer's meeting going, like, well, everyone's going to know what the Red Scorpion is. Let's do a big deal. Let's make him a huge thing. And it's like, yeah, kind of. But, like, it didn't need to be this, you know, it's not Sephiroth. Like, it doesn't need to be this massive thing. I think, like, on the top of my head, the Red Scorpion is one of the most belabored fights in the whole game. I enjoy it, but it goes on for a while.
As a new player, as a new player, that was so frustrating, because, like Benji said, it's you're getting to grips with this new battle system, and I found myself having to, you know, use Phoenix Downs. And had I not been in this job and talked to Final Fantasy fans, I would have had no idea what Phoenix Down was or how to use it. You know what I mean? So I was getting into issues like that, where I think there was an assumption on the game's part that I knew what things were or how to use certain things in the combat, and that was kind of an issue. It's not like I need to be, like, hand-holded, just my expectations were slightly off when you first started.
Do you find that the difficulty curve is a little bit all over the place? Like, I find it perfectly possible that regular enemies can wipe the floor of you if you're not paying attention, whereas other ones, you'll just smash X and it's enough to get by. And then suddenly a boss will be much easier, and another boss will be a bigger spike.
That was part of the issue for me, because when you first jump into it, at least in my opinion, on the first level, when you're mashing those first enemies, you're just encouraged to kind of, like, you know, press square, use your ability, you just take them out, just blunt force it. Whereas when you get to that Scorpion boss, it's like, no, you've got to play it tactically. And I quite like that. I just don't think it's conveyed very well.
It's never conveyed that you need to consider your position so carefully either, I think, up to that point, especially...
This is one of the core things that me and Benji have disagreed on since the beginning, is that I think the combat is the best thing in it by far. Like, I think it's the best thing they've done, because it certainly isn't the new... I mean, I like the new story changes, but whatever, it's not necessarily them. But yeah, I love all that stuff in regards to, you know, the positioning elements and tactically taking your time and jumping between characters, queuing up specials and abilities and stuff. But I don't know. I don't know how much of that is me just bringing across, like, general sort of learning assumptions from other action games. I don't know, like, because I just kind of, I love all that stuff, but it doesn't lay out, you should split your characters up, you should position yourself.
I think the problem for someone like me is that you're going in with a certain degree of assumptions that it's supposed to be something commensurate with a JRPG battle system. So it's not necessarily obvious that positional awareness and actual spatial awareness and responsiveness is key to the battles, especially if you've played Final Fantasy 15 or Final Fantasy 12, where you've got an AI that can deal with your rest of your party's actions, and you can basically just focus on doing damage, and, you know, like, where your position doesn't necessarily have any impact on how you take damage, whereas it obviously does in this. And that's not always clear, because I don't think the enemy's always telegraphing moves particularly well. You can take a constant stream of damage without necessarily being an animation to go along with it. I think some of the basic, the default settings for camera and things like that are quite poor as well. I will say that. It was only after I found I could get more control in battle, more like a better view of it, to be honest. I found it quite hard to keep track of everything.
See, yeah, again, we disagree on that stuff because I haven't had any problems with with that stuff. But I totally get. I mean, looking online, there's many people who have said, "Look, it's just overwhelming. It's so over the top."
I understand that you were possibly better at the start of the game, and you get to grips with it more easily, which is fair. It's not necessarily my style again, but I don't understand why you haven't had issues with the camera when you change to your character and it'll just point at the face.
What? I haven't had that at all. Have you had that, Josh?
I haven't had that, to be fair. I must admit.
Benji, you should do some test cases.
It's the strangest thing. Every time I switch to a character, the camera will swing around and look at the face and it'll say, like, "I'm ready." And I'm like, "Well, I'm not because what? I can't see my enemy."
You do get the whole thing because, like, that's another part of the combat is that they've tried to hybridize turn-based stuff of the old school with the live action, you know, like platinum game style action of like the modern age, which I adore. But it does mean that you do have to hop between characters a lot, and you do have to sort of try and play all three at the same time.
You taught this to me because I think for a long period and early on in the game, maybe the first 5 hours, I was sticking with one character because I didn't like having to swap between them. And you are right, it made a huge difference once I started to, as you say, play it properly. But I don't think it's on the onus of a player to learn how to play it properly. The game should be a little clearer.
That, they tutorialize that up front. True. They tell you to switch people.
Is it automatic to assume that your party members will just stand there and do absolutely bot all unless you jump?
Well, they'll do everything other than trigger their abilities or spells.
But we don't really build up ATB, so sometimes you can be caught when you're in a pinch and you desperately need to heal, but you can't, you have to go on the offensive to heal, which I always find is a bit of it's counterintuitive. But obviously, a lot of that's been fixed by cycling between them constantly and keeping a constant stream of ATB, but I still find, I don't know, sometimes you can get caught in a cyclone of despair or a set.
Josh, you should come in. How have you found adjusting to the combat?
I do agree with Benji. Well, I agree with you both because now that I've gotten used to it, I do love it in getting through a boss by using all the different abilities, exploiting weaknesses, swapping between characters is awesome. But there was genuinely 6 or 7 hours where I was just hitting a brick wall, trying to figure out what I was supposed to do. It sounds like, you know, I'm ragging on it, but like 6 or 7 hours is a long time to be negative about a game before you get to love it. And my issue is, with what Benji was saying, that it's hard to know how you should be playing it. I think even though they do tutorialize everything, they don't sort of, you know, explain the significance of doing it. They're like, well, you can swap characters. But before then, I've just been sort of encouraged to button mash as Cloud, and that's got me through, you know, battles and stuff. And I think for me, it was difficult understanding how much of the, the battle system I needed to use, how much I needed to stop and choose specific, you know, abilities or spells or whatever, compared to positioning and using, you know, my regular attacks and being in the moment, like that sort of semi-turn-based thing with the ATB compared with the, you know, in-the-moment frantic action. Getting to grips with that was overwhelming, at least at first, but once it all clicks into gear, it is good. It's just, I feel like they could have done a bit of a better job getting you to that position where you felt confident, you felt like you sort of knew what you were doing. It's a weird complaint because normally I'm okay with action games taking their time to ramp up and for you to learn it because that's part of the fun. But this felt from the first level a bit all over the place, like the difficulty spiking was already happening, if that makes sense.
I'll totally say that I think the Red Scorpion fight goes on for too long, but in terms of like that idea of like, yeah, they could have like gave you melee attacks at the beginning and then said, hey, by the way, when Jesse gives you the first piece of materia, that could have been the first time you do a materia attack and like fold that into the combat, and then, oh, by the way, you've got your abilities and your limit breaks and you juggle this stuff together. I appreciate a game that has everything on offer and it lets me like dive in fully, and I'm like, okay, I can combine this with this and the game will keep up with me. I can then switch over here and do this. Like, I found that the more you just go with it, like, and just go like, just like flesh yourself out and flex with it. I don't know. I love that it doesn't hold your hand at all. And like I think like it upfront tutorializes the switch character stuff to the point where I just went with it.
It doesn't hold your hand, but it does punish a player for not approaching battles in the exact way that they want you to, particularly bosses, which I don't necessarily mind. I don't mind there being tactics and certain like strategies for bosses, but if you deviate or if you come into a boss unprepared in some way, like you don't have the correct material, it can become very, very difficult and very attritional.
I mean, I would totally say that applies to the hard mode where like you can't even use items on hard, so you need to have like spec materia to recover MP and HP. But what was your example there? Like, what was the thing that made you think that?
The Hell House, which is a boss that a lot of people be having issues with. Now, I came in, you only have two characters at the point, I don't want to spoil it too much, but I didn't, because all the battles up to that point had been quite easy, I didn't have a full range of elemental materia equipped, which was absolutely necessary to exploit that enemy's weaknesses. And it just went on and on and on.
It's long. I wouldn't say that you can get through it, but it does elongate it. It's more of a benefit.
But It was, like I say, it was totally attritional, where it was, I was coming in, doing a little bit of damage, stepping back, healing with prayer or whatever, and coming back in. And it must have took about 30 minutes in the knowledge that if I make a mistake, I'll have to do it all over again as well.
Mm-hmm. So it's strange because sometimes they pull from that, because that is like a Final Fantasy trope almost. Like, you have bosses that have like 12 million HP and they're going to do these crazy attacks.
It's not really fair necessarily to level this criticism at the remake, because I think it always was the case in Final Fantasy that hindsight was your best ally in tough bosses.
Well, yeah, and I like my thing, because now that I'm going back through it on hard, trying to get the platinum and killing myself, that every single boss has a very specific, you know, you respec materia every other boss. And, you know, and it's like, oh man, I died to a one shot thumb dagger spell. Okay, I need to make sure I have a mana ward barrier on my whole team. So I'm going to combine barrier with magnify so I can, you know, and have a first strike materia. Like, there's all that.
When those things existed in Final Fantasy VII, Final Fantasy VI, whatever, you'd look at them and say, well, it's an artifact of an old method of game design where the player would be punished for not being psychic. Is it still acceptable now?
I think for me, it's like it would be like an all-out negative if there was no way for you to get through those fights. And I think that the Hell House fight did go on for a while. The Red Scorpion fight went on for a while, but I didn't feel like I was being punished for doing something wrong. I was just like, oh, I could have done this better, but I'm still getting through it. But I don't know if that's the same, Josh, if you'd like agree or anything.
Oh, you know, it's interesting. It's because the Hell House fight, for me, that's one of my favorite fights so far. I love that thing.
Well,
That came when I knew what I was doing. You know what I mean? I felt like I had full range over these options and knew how to exploit weaknesses and knew the best tactics in these fights. In that entire run of like the Colosseum, I loved it. That's part of the stint where I just thought, you know what, this is great. It's all finally clicking and I'm having a good time. And the Hell House boss for me was kind of a way for me to flex off those skills that I'd learned that I wish I'd learned before the Red Scorpion fight. So I actually love that, but I can see why, if you're not in that mindset, it might be incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, we can get back to this too, but like in terms of overall story layout, I know you guys both haven't finished and we're not going to do spoilers, but me and Benji both found the opening to be like stronger, and then it's sort of like it's got like a lag in the middle, mainly because we're comparing it to the original, I think. But Josh, you went massive on it at the beginning, but it's this middle bit where you get to sort of relax and actually take things in that's when it started to click for you.
Yeah, I've been enjoying the relaxing and just sort of exploring and talking the best. Like, I loved going to, you know, the suburbs quite early on. That's when I thought it might have something special that I really love. Because I like that characters should have parents in this game. You never see video game protagonists with mums, like, and dads and relatives. It's odd, but it's good. It adds a bit of a more emotional depth. But yeah, when I got to Wall Market, and when I was, you know, Cloud getting to know Aerith, walking through the big junk, I think it's Sector 6. Like, those quiet moments I absolutely properly adored, like when the music's firing off, when you've got these characters, you know, interacting, when you've got these lovely realized over the top facial, you know, expressions popping off and stuff. I properly adored that stuff. Now, I haven't felt the need to, you know, get to the next story beat because I feel like it's quite nicely woven in. Yeah, there are elongated levels, which are a problem. You know, the fact that you have to get three keys or you have to, you know, get the sewers up, that is an issue. Yeah. But for me, the story payoff to all of this is worth it. And not knowing where it's going to go, apart from what I assume are a few key elements that have to happen, it's been nice to have this like mystery unfold. I love the flashbacks between you know, Cloud and Sephiroth and, you know, his weird head thing that's going on. I like the backstory to all these characters. The only one I don't really love so far is Barret, but I suppose I've spent the least amount of time
with him. He's got a massive thing coming that you don't find out until after Midgar, and they don't even like hint at it here, but he has a huge thing coming in regards to him and Marlene and all that stuff.
He is just a walking cliche. He's a walking
I think cliche. They do, I don't know, I think they do him. Enough with him so he's not one-dimensional.
Well, I don't know. Not enough for me. See, Josh, coming into this blind, you have a totally different experience where you don't recognize when things are being stretched out artificially. You sat there knowing what the story beat is and knowing this part is there just to impede my progress. you know, and you talk about quiet moments as well. I think one of the things the game doesn't do well is subtlety. Like, nearly everything is said, nothing is left unsaid.
I would say that's for all JRPGs.
It is. Yeah. And it would be nice if it wasn't the case in this one as well, but.
Yeah, it's funny when it comes to that stuff, because at first, like, the incongruity between these characters and the setting was kind of an issue, you know what I mean? Like Scott said, a lot of these RPGs, and I guess Final Fantasy at large, sort of has those things that you just go with, kind of like Metal Gear has those things that you just go with.
I mean, that was actually purposeful, I think. Yasunori
Kitase.
Katassi, sorry, yeah, thank you. He wanted Cloud to stand out in that environment to draw attention to him. So I'm glad that's returned. It's actually, that's not a problem for me. It's more just sometimes I don't react to the world in a real way. And if you really stop and take in the details, it doesn't ring true either. Particularly in the
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
As I say, with the amount that they fall back on, like that corridor design that came in with 13, like it can make some of the like living spaces feel like play sets, feel like pantomime, and just kind of feel like everyone's going. Because if like Benji, you found out immediately, and you can do this. If you run around in front of an NPC, they'll just repeat the dialogue over and over again. It's like it's designed for that first run through. Well,
if you are running past things and only viewing things on a surface level, then it's got a lot of atmosphere and it's got a lot of depth. But if you stop and look at the details, which is what fans are probably going to do, and it's what I did. You notice how artificial it is. So these are supposed to be the slums. These are where the downtrodden and the oppressed live. But actually, it doesn't seem like that bad a life. Besides, it's slightly muddy. Everybody is like dressed in middle class clothes. We all see the same four people over and over again. Nobody seems particularly like down on the look or particularly in a bad place of mind. They just happen to live underneath this place.
Yeah, I don't know how much that's them splitting the difference between like they want to flesh stuff out and they want to make sure that you know you can explore this space. And I love the first time you actually see Midgar from the slums up, but you see the middle chamber and all the actual peats are above you and stuff, which you never saw in the original one from that space.
The thing as well, just while I remember it, do you think that a lot of the game has been transposed to daytime? Even though the whole point of the oppression is that we're in perpetual darkness originally.
that's something that like I think they went with because it just looks so gorgeous and they kind of just wanted to have those sunsets and stuff like that. They still pay that off, I would say, when you get to the a bit later on where you get a different perspective, let's say. I think that they, I don't know, I guess, yeah, like I said, I think they're trying to split the difference.
I'm not really getting this sense of oppression at all.
Yeah, the music's called The Oppressed.
So what it extends to is people live in huts made out of corrugated steel. But other than that, they all seem fairly content with life. It doesn't seem that bad.
I think, well, I don't know, they kind of front load the environmentalist message a lot more earlier on in this one, like Barrett talking to the Shinra executive and how, like, you know, where are the bad guys, or where are we going to be the good guys, and that whole back and forward.
A good demonstration of a complete lack of subtlety in the writing, where all his employees start clapping him on the train, terrorist has just shouted him down. Like, seconds after a terrorist attack, he decides now is the time to shout in defense of him on a train.
There's a bit where one character is spared and then says, "What do you mean? I'm the enemy." And it's like, oh God, like, okay, I get it. But I don't know. That's like an anime sensibility, like a new age anime, Advent Children-ish sensibility that I feel you just have to kind of go with, because it just isn't, if you start noticing that stuff or being annoyed by it, it just drops.
I don't think you got that in like Final Fantasy VIII or Final Fantasy IX, which is really much subtler. And I think a lot of it has to do with the voice acting. Mm. It makes it like, a lot more present, but it also just like filling in the gaps of silence. So when you've got voice acting, for some reason, writers don't like for things to go unsaid or for the player to work something out. So they just have to put in a stupid line like, "Oh, we're here," or "Oh, we've done that now." Like,
yeah, I think it's some of that stuff. Like I said, it's more like a new age thing. It's almost Kingdom Hearts-y, but there's always little grunts and noises and stuff to acknowledge the end of a sentence, which I know is more like an Eastern thing in like anime and in like Eastern sort of cartoons and stuff anyway. But yeah, that stuff sort of, I don't know, that stuff does kind of stick out in terms of, like I said before, I think they're trying to split the difference between we want to flesh out this area, but also they're aware that those areas only take up like half an hour, 20 minutes of the original, and they're really dragging them out. Have you guys found the side quest design? Have you been spending more time in the hub world?
Do you know what? It sounds like I really hate this game, and I don't want it to sound like that, because I have enjoyed the game, but I'm holding it to a very, very high degree of scrutiny, which is what a 6-year development cycle that's been billed as a Final Fantasy VII remake. It demands, especially as a huge fan of the original. I have to be negative again on the side quests, because they're just so banal. They're so inane.
I think the structure is bad, but I think the rewards are good. But it means you do have to put up with it.
Like, the overall reward for completing them all, or do you mean the individual rewards, like the items?
Both. There are multiple trophies, secret cutscenes, secret dialogue scenes that are tied to side quests.
Do you enjoy doing them, or do you just feel like you're going through the motions of going to this place and the map, killing the enemy, coming back? Like, I got to the point where I wasn't really paying any attention to the story itself of these little side quests.
I know. I was waiting for you guys to finish talking, because I don't know how it was in the original, but using those side missions as a way to kind of slow the pace down has been quite rewarding. I agree with Ben in that the side missions themselves and what you're actually doing is really repetitive and kind of dull. Mm-hmm. But the ability to, you know, interact with more people in these hubs has been really satisfying. Like, I really enjoyed the Angel of the Something?
Angel of the Slums.
Yes, Angel of the Slums. I love that little story. I love messing around Wall Market with Johnny. I thought that was a lot of fun. And yeah, what you're doing isn't that substantial, but I think they do serve to kind of flesh out the world a little bit more, at least from my perspective. And I've enjoyed, you know, taking a break from the big boss fights to spend an hour or two doing them.
It's a totally different philosophy to the side quests of the original and of the, like, the old Final Fantasy games, to be honest, where those were something that you discover on your own, that were possibly environments that weren't noted or that you weren't directed to, secret bosses, little items that you'd find through puzzles and things like that, things that you worked out yourself rather than it being front-loaded on a list where you basically just check it off, which is, again, it's a modern sensibility, but it's not one that I like.
I do think that, like, yeah, like the actual quest goals where it's like, go kill 5 of these, go retrieve this item, like that's lame on it, you know, on its face. But having now done all of them for the sake of the platinum, even though I did I only left like 2 or something the first time through, the rewards overall I do think are worth it.
I just bring you back and compare with Final Fantasy VII, the original. Mm-hmm. One of the side quests in that game is unlocking Yuffie as a character. Mm-hmm. Now, that's something that you could miss for a little bit.
I'd say that's more just like a secret.
Well, exactly, but a lot of the side quests are secrets that are there that you're probably not going to discover them unless you've got a guide, which I didn't mind. Things like getting Knights of the Round, for example, like the ultimate side quest in that game, or going to the Hidden Forest, or going to the wreckage under the sea, all optional and all stuff that you're not told to do, and rewards are much greater because you get like unique environments and unique bosses. And
Seven's remake still has them, just not. They're not. You're not really going to find them unless you really go looking.
Is there anything that you should do in this game that it doesn't tell you to do? Because I haven't found anything so far.
How do you mean?
It's on a menu that isn't presented to me as here's an activity that we think you should do.
Oh, I guess if you took menus out of it, then no. But like the amount of things that you'll... Well, I don't know, because there's lots of little things that you discover, like in terms of... It is all menu-based, but there are things like when you go back through it on hard, like the different VR challenges are great. The fact that the way that you trigger like something like the different dresses in Chapter 9 or the different bosses that you can unlock different cuts.
The dresses is a good example, because... Mm-hmm. When you're talking about the VR stuff, it does feel like I'm just working down a shopping list.
Yeah, but there's so much. Like, you know how in the original game there was this background system of point checking in terms of which characters you were talking to, and that then became which cutscene you got at the Golden Saucer. There's all that stuff is still in here. It's just that it's not front-loaded whatsoever, and I love that.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking yesterday, Scott, when I got to the dress part, and you were like, oh, which dress did he get? And I was like, there's a choice? What? Yeah. Sorry? I think I must have missed all of this system.
But
I enjoyed that so much.
Yeah, sorry, there's like character, there's like was one really good, really, really great scene that is contingent on how your dialogue choices have gone to that point, and they don't tell you until then. It's not Telltale style of like, this character will remember this or whatever, and it's not even contingent necessarily on conversations you've had with that character. It's just that when you get to a point in the story, you are then served up a particular character based on how it went.
That's really great, and I really, like Josh, I really enjoyed that whole sequence. I just wish more of it was a little more organic in that way.
Mm. I wonder if they over the years have realized that approach just like, you know, people aren't going to see the majority of the game in that case.
That's it. I think it's a developer's fear of people missing content and missing the hard work, which I completely understand, but I think it takes away some of the mystery and the appeal and like just the enigmatic nature of the game, which used to be so magical.
I think, yeah, I would agree with that overall, but some things like Chadley's late game rewards, some of the harder VR challenges, some of the things that you go up against, and some of the, like I said, some of the dialogue, like if you do all the side missions in Chapter 3, that extra Tifa scene you get is like fundamental to that, to the game. And I quite like that they found a way to reward you overall with actually being a hardcore fan of it. Like, if you really do 100% in the game, you get an experience that is closer to the original. Which you could argue they should have done that in the first place, but I think that I like the way that they've made something for newcomers. Like Josh is finding it quite positively, and then if you take the time to flesh everything else out, it is rewarding on that whole other level.
Yeah, there was even another system, and I keep banging on about Wall Market, but I really love that section. But there's a moment where you have to search for sick patients and give them some medicine or whatever. And I only found out afterwards that, you know, that mission becomes even larger. There's more people to find if you use the right material slots and you've been upgrading it and stuff. And I thought that was a cool way to sort of mix in what you've been doing in the gameplay with the actual, you know, quests themselves and the storytelling, rather than just having someone give you an amount of enemies you need to go kill.
That was good, because in most JRPGs and Final Fantasy is a particular offender is that the battle system has no relation to anything that's happening outside of it.
Yeah.
And I think obviously in here the two things are married very closely, particularly obviously with the changes to the battle system to begin with. Mm-hmm. But also, I actually agree that was a great section. What did you, Josh, what did you think of the big set piece in Wall Market? I'm sure you know which one I mean.
Yes, I really enjoyed it.
I thought it was one of the highlights of the game.
I was going to say, we haven't got to be completely spoiler-free. I mean, everyone knows that there's a big dance sequence in Wall Market.
Right. That was the moment for me where the game was great, and then I realized I loved it. I had this stupid, gigantic grin on my face, and it was horrible. I was playing with my girlfriend at the time, and I was trying to get Cloud to dance the best he could, and he did, and it looked spectacular, and it was so silly, it was so dumb, and I just thought it was amazing that there was that moment in this game that I was worried for the first few hours of Final Fantasy VII that it was just going to be these big corridor crawls of, you know, boss fights and combat and getting keys, and I was like, that might be fine, but it's not for me. And when you get to moments like the big dance and those little kind of strange set pieces that, you know, it really, really does indulge it. It's not sort of ashamed of it. It's not trying to push it under the carpet. It's just right there. It's so good.
Mm-hmm. This is one of the things that really separated Final Fantasy VII at the time. The whole Wall Market sequence was effectively an outdoor dungeon without any battles. You know, it's like Disco Elysium 22 years in advance or 23 years in advance. I'm really glad they've managed to translate that forwards. You do still have to do... They have put some combat in it, but you still have to go up Colosseum. So they have made it more about hitting things at swords.
There's so much little things like that where, like, me and Benji will know that they're bringing elements from beyond Midgar into Wall Market, because that arena is not in the original one, but there is a combat arena in the Golden Saucer.
I wonder about this. Do you think that maybe used things a little bit too liberally in this part when they're going to have to revisit some of the same things in the second
You
part.
Guys, we'll do another pod on how you feel about that sentiment once you've seen the whole thing play out, let's say. Okay. Because, yeah, you guys need to see where it goes, especially you, Benji. Josh, I'm curious what the hell you even make of what they've done. And then and then Benji, you might snap the disc, I don't know. But we'll see.
I'm to be honest, I'm completely at peace with all changes made to the storyline. I don't mind that it's complete reimagining. I've got no issues. I'm only judging it on its own merits. And the little things I enjoy in their own right. I do wonder if you replaced all the characters in this game and all the settings with something completely new, if it would be receiving quite as much praise. I do wonder about that. I still think
it's the best modern combat system in any Final Fantasy. Like, it's, I just think that's just phenomenal.
Well, yeah, but that's a low bar. It's a very low bar.
It's true. I mean, they're sort of known for pioneering turn-based combat in the West, and obviously they've tried different sort of live action approaches to stuff. And Kingdom Hearts 3 is this overblown sort of.
It's the most I've enjoyed playing a Final Fantasy game in its combat since 10.
Right. Yeah.
I do feel like, although I find it difficult, and I find that I can never dodge at any right moment or block at any right moment, mm-hmm. and the camera, as I say, is pointing at the shoe. I do find I have far more control over three characters at once than I ever did in Final Fantasy XII, and particularly 15, where it was just chaos for me back then.
I do find, like I said, the biggest strength that this thing has is the more you challenge yourself to like explore that, like hopping between everybody, queuing everything up, just, I don't know, on like a sheer synaptic level, like the amount you can do in this game at once and the frame rate will keep up and it'll be able to do everything. That's the stuff that clicks in a way that no other Final Fantasy's ever got close to, just in terms of sheer simultaneousness.
I think it still could be refined though, the battle system. I think there are some changes that could make. I think if it was slightly slower or more responsive, one of those two things would help.
Oh, mine's more just all they need to do for me is remove the fact that you can be queuing an item up or a heal spell or anything and you can get knocked out of it just from off screen. Yeah. Now, I would change that. I would make it so that the camera responds better when you're in the air, when you're indoors and in the air. And other than that, I think it's almost perfect. It's just that that stun lock stuff, when the game just wants to kill you, it'll just stun lock you and you can't do anything because you can't parry out of a combo. And you're just dead. And if you try to heal after that, you get hit again. It's things
just
like that.
One thing, it's just for Final Fantasy fans as well, this will be relevant. Final Fantasy VII was interesting, and it was quite like 6 in that all the characters were effectively identical. Other than base stats, you could equip any material on any character. You generally could have items that would allow for range. Some would be slightly better at magic because of base stats, like I said, but no one had like a defined role, whereas that was always the case in the first 5 Final Fantasies. I think went back to that here, where each character, each of the 4, has a very defined role. Cloud is like a balanced tank. Tifa is obviously a DPS machine. Barret's a range guy, and Aerith surface support and magic.
Oh man, so
it's like
once once you have everything that Aerith can do, it's insane.
Yeah, it's like those are your traditional Final Fantasy classes of like fighter, monk, mage, white mage, and I don't know what Barret would be, I suppose, a dragoon of some sort, maybe? I don't know. Long distance ninja. But I think that's good. And I think maybe, again, if you're coming into it with memories of the old one, you expect all the characters to be very similar and you can just swap material willy nilly and it'll be the same. Obviously, that's not the case. And it takes a while to get used to each, the strengths and weaknesses.
Mm-hmm. Well, like, over time, like, I mean, we'll wrap this part because we'll clearly do more follow-ups, but I think over time I thought of it sometimes as this like Disney style remake, like when you look at Beauty and the Beast, The Lion King, The Jungle Book, like this sort of approach of this big blockbuster approach to something that used to feel so sincere and more genuine and more like, you know, this need behind its creation in the first place, whereas in the new age it's like, well, you know, there's going to be more monetary reasons as to why we're revisiting it and things like that. But having now seen all of it, and again, you guys need to see where it all goes, I do think it finds a good way to hang between the two, and the more that I've played it, the hard mode stuff, the rewards, that's the stuff that made me go, okay, the old school FF7 is in here. It's just that all this other blockbuster bluster is still in here, is front loaded. That's the stuff you see first, which you very much get at the beginning, which is the stuff that felt overwhelming.
Yeah, for me, I was going to say, for me as a new player, it does feel like there's still a lot of heart to it. Like, even if it might be a recreation or done for, you know, monetary reasons, I suppose, you know, what isn't? I feel like even the indulgences, they're done so lovingly. Every single time it cuts to Aerith and she's looking directly at the camera, every frame is sort of like lovingly put together, and it's making you, you know, want to fall in love with the game. And I do like appreciate that. I do feel like it has... it has heart where it needs to have it. And going back to what you said a little while ago, Benji, about do you think that if this was a new game, would the response still be the same? I'm sure it would be, you know, a bit more muted, but I think the core drive of it and the core characters and, you know, the core the atmosphere, I suppose, as well, makes those faults. It doesn't excuse the faults, because I still think the level design is needlessly elongated and, mm-hmm. you know, padded, but it elevates everything. You know, when it gets it right, the passion behind it, the heart and the through line story and characters, I do think, you know, makes it something quite special, at least from my mm-hmm. perspective.
Well, in terms of they literally do have, for the first time, like Nobuo Uematsu coming back to rescore the game, the original composer. They have a lot of the creative team coming back, like the combat designer and stuff like that. So it's like, it is by default going to have, the people are going to have to care to make it work. It's not just been sort of churned out, like something like my example for something being churned out would be Resident Evil 3. But like that idea of, you know, they do have the original team. And like I said, there has to be some passion in there, and it does come through.
The only absentee is Hironobu Sakaguchi, which, and I think he would probably have tempered some of Tetsuya Nomura's more outlandish notions, let's say.
Oh my God, yeah. There's a, like, let's, I'm going to stay away from all the spoiler stuff.
To his credit, there are far fewer zips in this game than any other.
Hey, you've not seen someone who is Zip City later on. But yeah, we'll wrap the pod for now. We'll probably end up returning to this, because I'm really curious what you guys think of the ending. And I'm potentially doing an ending explain type video as well going forward. But for now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Benjamin Richardson.
Thank you very much.
And Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
I'll catch you next time. Bye.
See ya. Bye. Thank you. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.